You know, we all have a lot of data, and it has to positively, absolutely stay safe.
It can't get into the wrong hands, and the biggest challenge we have is how to transfer it from here to there. We all know as leaders that legacy tools that transfer our important files and sensitive data are mostly outdated and fall short on security, especially with the demands of today's remote workforce. Relying on outdated technology puts our organization's brand at risk, and that is unacceptable. So we are excited to invite you to step into the future of completely secured managed file transfer from our friends at Kiteworks. Kiteworks is absolutely, positively the most secure managed file platform on the market today. They've been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. And unlike traditional legacy systems with limited functionality, Kiteworks has unmatched software security with ongoing bounty programs and regular pen testing to minimize vulnerabilities. And the coolest part, they have easy to use one-click appliance updates you will love. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com to get started today. And now the show.
It's always in the news. Cyber criminals attacking great organizations, wreaking havoc on the trust of their brand.
We socialize cybersecurity for you to raise awareness.
Interviewing leaders who built and protect great brands.
We help talented people enter into this incredible field, and we share our research at blockbuster true cybercrime stories.
This is Cybercrime Junkies. And now the show.
All right. Well, welcome everybody to Cybercrime Junkies and the
Brett Johnson interview.
We are really, really honored to have Brett Johnson join us. I will tell you that every time we speak, we always learn something from him. And more than that, it's always entertaining. So right before we started, and in the studio, as always, is my fantabulous, always positive co-host. And those are Insincere Things to Say to Coworkers from my Insincere Things to Say to Coworkers app that I have. Mark Mosher. Mark, how are you?
You know, I get excited about all our special guests, but I am amped up today to have, you know, did you ever have like a really cool uncle that he's probably going to teach you how to do something that's going to get you in trouble?
Yes, I did.
I know you literally did. And we'll talk about that. But man, I'm so pumped up. I don't hold it against him that he went to that little brother university down the street from mine, the second best university in the state of Kentucky. And I like that he wore his hat just to remind me of the fact. So, David, let's kick this off.
I can't believe it. So, Brett, welcome, sir. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you. You know, you've got that intro. That intro is magnificent. My intro for my show, I just scream at the screen. That's it.
It's fun. It's just fun. You know what I mean?
I know. So you were talking before you pressed, you know, the streaming button.
Before you went live.
We were checking out Buc-ee's. We were talking about Buc-ee's. And for those in the, you know, Ohio, Michigan, North, like you might not know what Buc-ee's is, because I certainly did it until I actually saw post from you talking about it. And I was like, what the heck? It is like, it's a gas station, but it's like almost like a hotel. It's got like everything. It's got it's like a shopping mall. It has, it's a gas station with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of aisles, but the food there, you walk in and they like are wheeling in fresh brisket, cutting it fresh for people.
Yep.
Like they have breakfast sandwiches that are like that big. They have clothing that was like nice. It was like walking into a Target. It was weird. It was like the cool, it was such a good experience that we hit every one on our road trip. We kept going. We're like, well, that one's 45 minutes out of our way, but
let's
we're going.
That.
So yeah, let's go. That.
They may have something different.
Dude, yeah, right? It's awesome. It is awesome. It is like, it is one of those like only in America, but you don't like shake your head. You're like, yeah, only in America.
That's true.
We actually this right.
Would a gas station be a destination on your vacation?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, so now outside of Birmingham, we have one. So, and I visit it frequently. But before that, they were just in Texas. And so every trip I took to Texas, I would find on the map where the closest Buc-ee's was. So I remember I was in like Austin or someplace like that, and I drove an hour and a half out of my way to go to Buc-ee's. I was committed.
And I
probably should be.
They have like 100 gas pumps at this place. It's ridiculous.
Yes, they do. It's magnificent. And they don't allow truckers on there. I have nothing against truckers, but that speaks highly of the Buc-ee's environment.
Well, what I was shocked is, and Buc-ee's, by the way, Buc-ee's, go to a Buc-ee's near you. And they're not a sponsor, but if they're interested, call us.
Exactly.
Call us, because I am telling you, I can't say enough about it. There were so many people in this place, and there was a massive line. You get your food, you get your whatever stuff you need, like a lawn chair, like clothing.
It is true.
Like utility knives, whatever you need, you go and you get. And then there's a long line, and literally it just keeps moving. Like, you don't stand still. You just move along. They were perfectly gracious, super helpful. And we were in line for like less than a minute the whole time.
See,
like,
see.
I couldn't. They did it right. It was amazing. That's great. So, Mr. Johnson, you are back on YouTube. We are great to see.
Yes.
I am back on YouTube. I'm hoping that I'm able to stay on YouTube this time without getting banned again.
I'm confident you will.
I hope so. You know, I did a 3-hour episode just the other day. I don't know if you caught that or not.
I saw the write-up for it, but I have a job and a family, and I don't even watch my own, like,
you didn't watch ours anyways.
I didn't watch ours.
I don't content either. I did. The weird thing was the night before I recorded an episode, and I dumped the entire thing because I thought it was too long.
Came
in at 90 minutes. So. Then I record the 3-hour thing.
But the 3-hour one, what was your topic there? Because we'll have links to your channel in our show notes when we release this as a formal episode. We're doing it live now, obviously.
So my problem is right now I've got a boatload of, I'm not sure if you could call it apathy, but just disappointment in the cyber industry. So this last episode was When the Good Guys Suck, Part 2. And
good guess. For those that were listening,
When the Good Guys Suck, Part 2.
See, that's why I like you so much.
You gotta play with toys. You gotta let us play with toys. If not now, when, and if not us, who?
Exactly.
As Kennedy would say. That's all I'm gonna say.
You know, the show was about how these fintech companies, Blue Acorn, Womply, MoneyLion, had helped facilitate pandemic fraud. Mm-hmm. So Blue Acorn, really bad. And come to find out, I've got an insider. I've got several insiders. But this insider had delivered unto me about 800 pages of documents having to do with these fintechs. And many of these documents are clearly stamped confidential on them. So I could not really talk about a lot of that.
But when you get that information, because back in the days when I was involved in like investigations and stuff like that, you get that stuff. You're like, holy God, it's like a movie. Like I was telling Mark one where I had inside information on an amusement park that had notice of molested kids and all this. And they were burying it because they didn't want the press. And the cops were mad at the local amusement park because their cops wouldn't turn it over to the actual trained police so that they could actually help the families. Right.
Sure.
And they got a hold of this and they made sure like people could find out. And like, they would literally meet me in like the garage of a parking lot. Right. And literally walk from behind a car. I'm like, am I going to get shot? This is like a movie. Like, I wanted somebody to be filming me at the time because, like, 15 years later, 20 years later, nobody would believe me if I told them that. But I'm telling you this happened. And they, like, literally put it underneath my thing and, like, walked away. They put it underneath my arm and, like, walked away. And I'm like, you guys really watch too many movies. Like, you could have just, you could have scanned it and emailed it to me. You could have posted it on Dropbox and let me know. Like, there's a whole bunch of ways you could have given this to me, but you wanted to make this like scene. But I got something to talk about.
I'll tell you the worst bit about these documents. All right. So these documents, my contact, he's the guy that really blew the horn on Blue Acorn and Wampley. All right. Mm-hmm. So he's vested into this. But where he got the documents off of the House Committee's website They uploaded 800 pages of attorney-client privilege documents before they realized, oh, we shouldn't upload these. So then they took them down, but not before at least he downloaded the things.
Wow.
So that's what we're dealing with. So I was, he tells me where they came from. I'm like, well, hell, I'll just go ahead and start talking about it. And then he contacts me because I mentioned it on part one of When the Good Guys Suck that I was going to talk about this stuff. And he gets up with me. He's like, hey, man, I would appreciate it if you didn't, show these documents on the screen because we're trying to put people in prison. And I'm like, gotcha. Understand completely.
Oh, absolutely.
It's that right. serious.
It's that well, serious. Yeah.
It's one of the things where time. Like, but if it's up there, you want to be, you like the public can access it, right? So why wouldn't you talk about it on screen? It's up there.
That's
right?
What I thought. And so then what happened was, and the reason I did the show and I cut out, so I didn't show any of the confidential documents at all, showed the stuff that was not marked confidential, which there was only like 15 or 20 pages total in that. But what happened was a criminal, one of these pandemic fraudsters on Telegram, he listened to part one of the show of the series and he contacts me. He's like, hey, man, I want to have a talk with you. So we got on the phone. We're talking. He's telling me about all this pandemic fraud and how it was happening and these specific companies. And I'm like, well, hell, I've got to do a show on this.
Yeah.
So that's what the second part was a recap of the interview with him, why and how pandemic fraud had occurred, and then how these fintech companies had helped facilitate that fraud. So it comes out, 3 hours long. And I'm like, okay, it is what it is.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We all have a lot of data, and it has to positively, absolutely stay safe.
It can't get into the wrong hands, and the biggest challenge we have is how to transfer it from here to there. We all know as leaders that legacy tools that transfer our important files and sensitive data are mostly outdated and fall short on security, especially with the demands of today's remote workforce. Relying on outdated technology puts our organization's brand at risk, and that is unacceptable. So we are excited to invite you to step into the future of completely secured managed file transfer from our friends at Kiteworks. Kiteworks is absolutely, positively the most secure managed file platform on the market today. They've been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. And unlike traditional legacy systems with limited functionality, Kiteworks has unmatched software security with ongoing bounty programs and regular pen testing to minimize vulnerabilities. And the coolest part, they have easy to use one-click appliance updates you will love. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com to get started today. And now the show.
Now that makes sense then. Yeah. That makes
it does.
Wow.
So, and for those who, I don't know why they wouldn't know who the hell you are, but for those
or you know, or Mark.
That's right. That's right.
For those who don't know, I can understand not knowing who we are. That's okay. But if you don't know, Brett Johnson is the U.S. Secret Service had called him the original cybercrime godfather. Now he's an infamous good guy, and he addresses top security tips we all want to know, has the Brett Johnson show, and works for a security company offering security services, cybersecurity service layers, and is a consultant, is a world-renowned public speaker on the topic. A lot of help on fraud scams, romance scams, and really understands how it is. Also, an insider that helped us with our theories on the Jerry Cotton case, which was really useful.
That was
I am still waiting. I know I'm going to bump into that guy someday.
Yeah, when he's behind bars, hopefully.
Yeah, well, I hope I don't bump into him there. Maybe I'll see him online is what you meant.
There you go, exactly.
I hope I'm not like, so Jerry, they got us, man. Like,
they got us.
I can't believe it.
They found my
Ethan
wallet.
Finally caught up.
Your cookie from the commissary, Jerry.
Yeah.
So you know, my thing is I've got apathy, disappointment in the industry because.
Yeah. It's disappointing. It's frustrating.
It's my issue is, you know, we've got like, you know, I did a show on where the SEC or the FTC and the state of Florida have filed complaints against chargebacks in 9/11 for illegal activities. Mm-hmm. So no one else in the industry is talking about that. They're keeping
it's almost like the fraud part isn't talked about in cybersecurity.
Right.
And what frustrates me about that, and I just did a, you know, we also talked to like John DiMaggio and Analyst One who does like undercover things. And I'm like, do they not like cybersecurity is the protection from cybercrime.
Right.
That's what it is.
Right.
Like, why do you not talk about the online scams, the romance scams? All of those are forms of social engineering. All those are forms of fraud. The pig butcher attacks, like all of these fraud schemes, right, are all elements of social engineering for monetary gain. They're all violate certain laws depending on where you apply it, where it occurs. Uh-huh. It's the same thing. Why does ransomware get more pressed than this?
Exactly.
Like, I don't get it.
I don't get it.
No,
I don't understand it. I don't get it. I don't know why. You know, we've got professionals in the industry who won't speak out against, you know, members of their team. We've got all these issues that are going on. We've got a cybersecurity industry that is lacking. Let's just say it like that. I put a post out yesterday that was talking about some of these issues of, you know, if your entire company is based on the idea of providing security that is simply depending on criminals to be stupid, there's something wrong with you at that point.
I saw that post. I just saw that a little while ago, actually.
I don't get it. I really don't. So I've got a lot of apathy, and I keep saying to myself, "Not today, Satan."
Not today, Satan.
Oh, I like it. I like it.
So, okay, so I agree with you, and some of it has to do with what are the rules. Right. Like, what are the friggin' rules? Like, the deeper my studies and research and experiences have been with clients and questions clients are asking us, like, okay, well, we should go by the NIST standards. Well, no, we should go by the CIS standards. Well, no, CISA's got this. And then this, and I'm like, yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem. Like, there isn't like a set of like one single set of rules. Then we've got the administration who came out with the US cyber strategy 10 years too late, and they came out with it, but it's good. Like, I liked the words that were said. I liked it. Like, I was like, so we're going to actually get proactive. We're going to do a little.
That doesn't mean we're going to do that. They just wrote it.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it
on paper though,
but now, but all it is it's, I used to have a professor that used to say, if you don't act on it, it's just so much parchment, when he was talking about the Constitution, right? Like, it's just so much parchment. And it's true. Like, those are great words, but it's just so much parchment, meaning it's just words on paper or digital paper. That's it. It means nothing other than we really want to do something. This is bad. And then nothing happens.
I mean, but that's the thing, right? I mean, we're in an industry where a lot of words are spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also in an industry where there's a lot of silence when words need to be spoken.
Yeah.
That's the issues, right?
Yep.
And you know, like you take crypto, for example.
Well, I've got a couple of things I wanted to go over with you and tell me what you think about this. Let's talk about crypto, Joe Sullivan. I want to get your take on TikTok. I want to get I want to talk about fintech, like facilitating crime, but that gets into that gets into the crypto thing too.
Sure. And we should probably touch upon ideology. I'm traveling to Sweden next week. to give a presentation on ideology and how it's influencing those cash-based attackers.
Oh,
let's start there.
Wow,
can we start there? Let's start there because let me preface this. So I was talking with somebody over in Europe, one of my security buddies over there, and he was saying, he's like, we still don't understand you Americans. And I'm like, what do you mean? I go, I know, on what level though? Like,
a long list.
Which part? This is going to be like a 4-hour conversation, man.
Right.
And he goes, well, no, he's like, we take our data, our personal data is like a fundamental human right.
Right.
We protect it. It's why we came out with, like, you know, the standards, the rules, and there's consequences when it's violated, and they really care about it. And then Americans are like, we're just throwing stuff up, we're curating our lives, and if somebody takes it and sells it, we don't care.
I'll change my passwords, except my cookies.
I don't care. My password's my dog. By the way, my dog is Spot, and here's a bunch of pictures on it. And I love Spot. By the way, I use him as my password. I'll put that on Facebook. But they won't look. It's like, what? Like, they don't. I don't understand it. And I couldn't have agreed more. And I almost think it's because, is it? Or my question to you is, because you've traveled all over the world, is it because we're too geocentric? We know the areas around Ohio. We know the areas around Alabama and Louisiana and Louisville. I mean, Mark might know most of Kentucky. He probably hasn't been on the east side.
I haven't been out of Louisville.
But we know that, but we don't know jack about other countries or provinces there or whatever. People are like, where's Portugal? Like, Americans don't even know. Like, in general, we don't know that much about other parts of the world. And is that part of the problem?
You read any Tim Ferriss?
A little. I have.
Okay. So Tim Ferriss wrote a book called The 4-Hour Body, all right, which is his exercise program. It's a fantastic book. In the book, he talks about this thing called the bike shed effect, all right, which basically says, you know, you're building a shed in your backyard to house your bikes, and everyone has an input about it because, hey, everyone owns a bicycle. Everyone has a backyard. Everyone kind of needs something like that, all right? If you think about it, the internet's no different. Everyone thinks that they're an expert on the internet, all right? Mm-hmm. And everyone, especially in the United States, they really think they're experts. No one knows more than an American about politics, about the internet, about privacy, about safety, everything else. But you add into it the degree, and I just mentioned my own apathy, but I think Americans are very apathetic when it comes to cybersecurity. We hear every single day about some new breach that's happened, about some new attack that's happened, about how TikTok is stealing all of our data and handing it over to the Chinese government. We hear this every single day, to where it almost gets to this point where we're deadened by it. And I think, and that's really the reason that the number one victimized demographic is not senior citizens, but it's millennials. Those millennials have heard about this their entire lives. They've grown up in that tech environment, and now they're kind of desensitized to it. They're apathetic, and they simply don't care.
So but, can we pause for a second? I don't mean to cut you off, but the number one demographic that is affected by cybersecurity breaches and frauds are actually millennials, not millennials. The elderly.
Right. Now, second is the elderly, is senior citizens.
Right. Makes sense. Number two. Right.
But the number one by far is millennials.
Wow.
Because of that apathy, because they've been raised in that, they've been desensitized to those breaches. They've been told, if you think about it, all these security companies, mass media, what do we hear? It's hackers. It's computer geniuses. They're ghosts in the system. You'll never catch them. They're untouchable. They're unstoppable. Because of that, you get to the point where, okay, well, hell, I'll just adopt that degree of fatalism. Whatever's going to happen with my data is going to happen with my data. And they let it go. All right. And that means they're the most victimized demographic across the board.
That makes sense.
So consider that, but also consider that in the United States, we've had this, you know, carrot thing that's going on. We dangle a carrot in front of someone. Hey, you want this free app? Let us have your location data.
right,
share this with us. So we've trained people in the United States to give up their privacy, to give up their data for trinkets. Exactly. And I think that's a lot of the problem. And over in the EU, the UK, you're absolutely right. They respect their privacy. It means something. There's a reason that and I despise Edward Snowden. I can't stand the guy. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason that when he tells on everybody, you know, they're stealing our data, they're using it against us, everything else. And he was right that nobody really cared.
Right.
That's a great point, Brett, because nobody did, right?
Like nobody cared.
So, yeah. What's the problem? But over there, they do. Their privacy is almost, they take it personal, right?
That's
like
right.
It's personal to them. That data is personal.
You can have my location data. Just let me have 3 more attempts at Candy Crush and I'm good to go.
Yep.
That's what.
Yeah, because no app is really free.
Right.
Like, it costs a lot of money. The cloud hosting for that, the designer, the coding, the modifications, the updates, like none of that stuff's free. They're getting money off of you anyway. And
most people
just don't care and they just click accept all cookies because it's okay. Right.
We as Americans, we've never been taught the value of our information. You know, even Mark Zuckerberg, when he's in college and he's creating Facebook am I allowed to use colorful language here or not?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just mark it accordingly.
So Mark Zuckerberg, what he says is that all the people that are signing on to Facebook are, quote, fucking idiots because they give up all their information, all their data for what? To use this app. And that's the value of it.
And they voluntarily curate their lives. They voluntarily give them all the content he needs.
I'll give you everything. What high school I went to, what street I grew up on, what my pet's name is. I'll tell you everything.
Right. So in the United States, we've never been educated to what the value of that is. And because
there's so much value from targeted ads,
right,
to misinformation. I mean, part of the problem is if you're in a certain part of the United States and you're in a different part of the United States, when news is released and stories are told, you're hearing different stories of it.
Right.
You're actually being fed different lines and different stories. Like it's not the same, you know, you're in a, you have aligned yourself to the far left. You're getting far left feeding confirmation bias fed news releases and blogs about it and all of those things. And then in your other side of the spectrum, you're getting fed that. And
think about that. I mean, really let that sink in.
Yeah,
I do. I wake up every morning. I watch Fox News. I watch CNN so I can start my day off.
Exactly.
Pissed off
I was telling
everybody.
Mark, he goes, what are you watching? That? I'm not going to say which one, but what are you watching that one from? He's like, that one doesn't sound like you. I go, I always watch both sides. I'm trying to get to the truth because the truth is it's somewhere in the middle. It's going to be somewhere in the middle. Like it's not, neither one is telling us everything, right?
No. It becomes that idea of, okay, where do you find, if you're looking for truth, where do you find that in today's world? And I'm not sure you can.
Right.
You know, Fox,
it's much,
it doesn't
much
matter.
Harder than people think.
Yeah. So Newsmax, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, whatever, they've got their own agendas. Mm-hmm. And when you tune into those platforms, you see completely different shows and completely different topics that are discussed. Now, I'll grant you, there are, and I made the mistake because I was getting of the opinion that, okay, there's no real journalist out there. There are some real journalists that are out there right now. They're absolutely
I'm convinced there are. Yeah,
right.
There are.
But are they on the major platforms? That's something that I'm not seeing at all. I'm really not. I'm seeing editorial slants and contents. And that's the only thing that's out there. And because of that, you add this in with, I really believe that the American people on some level, I think that some of them consciously understand that, but I think on a much deeper subconscious level that they understand that as well. That's a lot of the apathy. That's a lot of this, this thing that's fomenting within the United States society of this discontent. And I really think we're seeing a lot of that discontent.
Massive polarization, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was at an event and I heard like two people on both sides of the aisles, so to speak, kind of debating. And I just remember I just sat there listening, and one was like, well, this shows that the Biden administration has implemented this brilliant plan, and it stemmed from this event that really was due to what Obama had done. And the other side was saying, well, actually, they erred in doing this because it was put in place because of what Trump had done. And I kind of stopped them both and I said, would you both agree that this happened? And they're like, well, yeah, that happened. And I go, okay. So both of, one of you guys said this happened because of him and this happened because of, you're just extrapolating subjectively, giving your guy credit through confirmation bias, whichever one you want.
Right.
But I think you guys can both agree this happened, right? This and this happened is good, right? And they were like, yeah. I go, all right, so you found some common ground. Okay, go. And I just sat back.
And you know, like, with me, I'm of the opinion, I've been of this opinion for a few years, that everything is interconnected. So, you know, we do cyber. Okay, fair enough. That's our industry. We do cyber. But every single thing has this connection, and it has an effect on our industry. So you take all this disconnect, the polarization, everything that's going on. I think that what we're seeing in, at least in the industry that we're in, I think what we're seeing is the failure of people to speak up and speak out, the failure of implementing proper security, of taking that extra step, like, you know, like financial institutions of taking that extra step to protect consumers. I think it boils down to people scared of losing their own slice of the pie. Yeah. You know, we've got our own little corner. We have to protect that. If we come out and say anything, we may lose a contract, a job, a client, some degree of profit. So they keep their mouths shut in the hopes that nothing will disrupt their own little corner of the universe.
Yeah, it's a loss aversion. Yeah. Loss aversion is more persuasive for behavior than gaining anything or saving money on something, right?
And you know, the thing is that, you know, prison taught me a lot of stuff. It did. And one of the big takeaways, and you hear guys inside say this all the time, if you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything.
Yep.
And there's
a great John Cougar Mellencamp song too.
There you go. There you
right? It's there true you. Though. It's true. Hey, so let me get your take on real quick, and we won't belabor this point, but on TikTok. I mean,
you know, Montana banned them yesterday.
Montana banned TikTok.
How many people are in Montana?
No dancing in Montana today.
Right? No dancing in Montana.
You can't share your dance moves in Montana today, and that's not true. You just can't. You just can't curate your lives while dancing on a platform that has ties to the Chinese government.
Well, I tell you, I've still got my TikTok installed on my phone. I do. And I am that algorithm is outstanding. You guys know I have spoken about this. You know, I flip through my talk and something will catch my eye. Typically, it's something that jiggles and I don't want to stay on it. And my eyes avert to that thing that jiggles. Right. And then the algorithm recognizes that.
It knows exactly what you're doing.
It does. The algorithm recognizes that and delivers unto me more things that jiggle.
Right. What's funny about this scenario is the communist regime in China is probably more worried that you've got their app than you should be that you've got their app. Oh, shit, Brett's got us on his phone.
So look, you know, TikTok, I flip on that a lot. I do think that the Restrict Act is overreaching, and it's designed for a hell of a lot more than just getting rid of TikTok.
Yeah, it's very similar to the Patriot. There's a lot of analogies to the Patriot Act post 9/11, right?
Right. Now, do I think that TikTok has been handing over to the Chinese government U.S. data? Absolutely, I think that. Mm-hmm. I also think that TikTok is capable with that Texas initiative of locking down the data and not delivering that data to the Chinese government. If they're allowed to do that, if they actually implement the Texas initiative as they say they're going to implement,
Which is questionable, and that's okay. I'm with you up until that point. I personally don't think that that's going to necessarily change anything, but that doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, it's really, and in the same sense too, there's still like the selling of data is going on with Instagram and Facebook and everything
that's
else anyway.
The next,
right? And that's really a different issue. Now, here, I think one of the concerns from what I've talked to for people in federal law enforcement is, well, what you don't understand are the bigger plays that aren't in the public. And that is, you know, they make a move on Taiwan, distributing and limiting and censoring what U.S. because there's a whole group of people that live almost exclusively on TikTok. And that's basically where they're getting their news.
Right.
And China knows that. And so they're like, we can disseminate propaganda that way. And so their concern is that. But
no, I understand. I think it's a valid concern because we've seen that bullshit before with Cambridge Analytica influencing things. Yep. We know it happens.
Right.
All right. But, you know, the thing is that, and I agree with you. China attacks Taiwan, we're going to see a lot of pro-China stuff hitting TikTok. There's no doubt about it. All right. No, I don't doubt that for a second. But the thing is that all these other platforms have been guilty of the exact same stuff.
Well, yeah.
And they're not being looked at all.
No. And that's a bigger, and to me, what I almost, that whole congressional hearing, you know, there were a couple zingers in there. There were some good questions, and there were some embarrassing parts that were like cringeworthy, and you're like, wow, can't believe you're in Congress. Does TikTok access the Wi-Fi? Yeah. can't believe you're in Congress. Like, who is elected these guys? Like, did I vote for that guy? I'm looking, I'm like, holy cow, I hope I didn't. Like
that one dude was as bad as that one SOB back a few years ago who was worried about Guam tipping over.
It was the same guy. Yeah.
There you go.
I remember that.
Yeah, so that was bad. And really, while the points made were arguably valid against TikTok, and the answers given were purely like, they weren't answers. He didn't answer anything. And I'm like, that is a good lawyer who got to him. Like, that was well played. The other thing was, though, is the elephant in the room to me that nobody was addressing is, why don't we have a set of regulations or rules about the problem?
Right.
Like Instagram, like all these other places are still able to do what TikTok is doing right now that you guys are flying them at.
And the reason why is that? You've got an outstanding algorithm with TikTok. It's so damn good that no other social media platform can touch it. Right. It's that good. And because of that, you've got all these US platforms that are raising hell about TikTok. We've got to get rid of TikTok because TikTok's drinking their milkshake, taking all their advertising dollars.
Yeah,
that's the issue. So nobody, hey, don't look at us. Look at the Chinese. Look at now, I grant you, it's valid. Look at it because it's a problem. But if you're going to look at it.
There's a bigger problem there is the point, right? It's not the only problem.
And nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody wants to talk about how Facebook, they influence the hell out of things. Just look at Cambridge Analytica. Look at what Instagram's doing. Look at, you're talking about the danger to kids on TikTok. Did you forget about Instagram? Did you forget about Snapchat?
Right.
Did that just conveniently leave the memory? Because those have been problems for a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and the algorithm, you know, social science, neuroscience has shown the addiction piece that it taps into the dopamine levels of the brain. And then the body morphism for young females that are going, like growing up, and they feel they're too fat, and you look at them, they're like a stick, and you're like, holy cow, what are you doing to yourself? And it's from this social media. It's from this whole thing that needs some protections.
I mean, if you really want to know how your children are being raised, Hell, get on TikTok, get on Instagram, and just see some of these feeds that were going on.
Be on the apps. I mean, yeah, we had somebody that is part of several congressional committees on it, and they're affiliated with Bark that has that like design that lets you know when your kids text and have things about suicidal ideation and all that stuff. And they were just saying, you want to know, you're never going to know by, you have to have conversations with your kids, but you have to be on the apps.
Right.
You actually have to see what they're seeing. It'll be shocking. It's shocking.
So,
you know,
my question is, okay, so you're going to complain about TikTok. That's fine. Why isn't Congress complaining about these other things? Again, I think it boils down to profit.
I was going to say, follow the money, and usually that's we can follow the answer.
The money always takes you to the answer, right?
Or
the
one that's it.
Well, and think about, we could take that step further. Follow the money, and you can find what's one of the best of all the verticals, of all the industries in the United States. What's the one that really takes cybersecurity seriously? Predominantly, it's the finance industry.
Right.
Right? They're the ones that have to, the banks have to have certain things, certain services, certain layers of security. They have to. In order to be in existence, you have to do this. And yet other industries don't. And it's like, well, I mean, that's part of the problem. I mean, TikTok's not really an issue in the banking industry. You know, you're not getting, you don't have like Facebook and TikTok on your company computer at working at JP Morgan or like working, you know what I mean? Like you don't have that. Like it's not an option there because it's all regulated, but you can at a hospital, you can at some of these facilities in schools, you can you're like, oh my gosh, it's definitely a challenge. So circling back, let's talk about the finance industry and fintech, because when we talk about fintech and crypto, I mean, it's a haven, and we've known it for a long time. It's a haven for cybercrime.
Well, you know, the two favorite words of any cyber criminal, fin and tech.
Yeah, right?
I mean,
that's fin and tech.
It's true. Tech. Because, yeah. And why is that? Tell us why that is.
So my theory on this, and it starts when I really, you know, started to work as a good guy. I was at Microsoft and we were going through SOX 5 proxies. All right. Mm-hmm. And there was this engineer that was there that was arguing with me. I was showing him how the SOX 5s were working, and we were going through LuxSox is what we were going through. And LuxSox was taking cloud-based IPs and making them look like residential was how LuxSox was actually working at the time. And very impressive. Very good setup. And until LuxSox finally shut down, and they shut down voluntarily about 4 years later, they were the number one proxy provider among criminals. But this engineer was arguing with me, and he was saying, you know, we can see this. We can see this. This is stuff that we can flag. And he argued with me for about 20 minutes until finally I looked at the guy and I was like, you know, yeah, I grant you can see it, but are you actually looking for that? And he gets quiet and he was like, well, no, we're not. And I was like, so then it doesn't matter if you're getting the data, if you don't look at the damn stuff, does it? And he was like, he gets quiet at that point. Now, the reason I tell you that story is typically in fintech, you've got a bunch of engineers that are on the cutting edge of designing products that benefit users. And they're never really looking at how those products and services can be used to commit fraud. It gets even worse than that, though. Typically, the fraud team is told to shut the hell up. We don't want to hear your negative comments as they're developing these products. So you've got a cutting edge type of system that's meant to make people's lives better, transfer money quicker, be very profitable, that's never really considered on how fraudsters could use that. All right. Meanwhile, you've got, for traditional financial institutions, you've got people that understand that, hey, money laundering is big. Right. Criminals at and the end of the day.
Yeah, there's regulations, there's rules, there's processes built in place for money laundering and for fraud scams and things like that.
And you don't have that. You don't have that degree of knowledge, understanding, or even caring on the fintech side. Now, that's not to say that all fintechs are like that. They're not. But there's enough out there that criminals know that, hey, these new products and services, basically, we can eat them alive. And they do constantly. Of course, with crypto, crypto's a big one, right? Because you're not going to pay for your stolen credit card data. You're not going to buy your fentanyl with cash. So you need something online to pay for that.
Can't buy. And let me be a hacker here.
can't buy ransomware with cash or credit cards.
That's right.
You need to use cryptocurrency. That's right. So what are some of the most prevalent scams that you've been talking about or you've been exploring that are involved in fintech?
Recently, I mean, so I was on, I think his show is out now, so I can talk about it. Eric Hundley, he has a very successful podcast. He got hit with a crypto scam about, just a few weeks ago. He contacted me. I've been trying to help the man.
Was it through a SIM swap where they got the keys to his wallet?
No.
Or how did it happen?
It was through an Instagram.
What?
So someone, an attacker, creates a very like Instagram account to a friend of his.
Okay.
Sends him a message, and it was really, I think it was only like a period on the end of the account name was the difference on that, and convinces Eric to start sending money over, and Eric doesn't notice it until a few thousand dollars is sent over at that point in time. So Eric gets up with me, and he's like, hey, you know, do you know anyone? I was like, yeah, man. I said, I've got friends in the FBI. I know Aaron West, you know, hey, I'll connect you. We'll see what we can do, because he was still on the line with these people. The crypto was being sent to wallets where it could be recovered, where it could be locked down, you know, major exchange wallets. So you would think something would happen.
Right.
He contacts the Norfolk FBI. They tell him to file an IC3 complaint. Which is useless.
Oh, I saw your posts on this.
My post on that.
I saw this because you were talking about it. It was like happening right in real time. You're like, does anybody know anybody over there? Because all we got was go file a form.
Right.
And you're like, well, we did that. Right. Nobody's called.
Now, here's the thing. Now, IC3, it used to be pretty useless. It still is if you're a low dollar person, because they triage every report that comes in. So if it's, you know, $100,000, oh, yeah, they're going to act on that quickly. If it's $5,000, you are not front in line.
Well, and part of it is just a matter of resources.
Right.
It's not, we don't have 10,000 FBI agents like sitting there waiting. Another one's coming in. Let's go. All 10 of us. You're let's jump on this one.
So to give you an idea, you've got 37,000 FBI agents. Only about 200 of them are cybercrime.
Exactly.
So you that don't have those resources. That's not
that
a lot.
That is not a lot.
It's not. And that's one of these things that I'm really having problems with right now is, you know, you've got somebody that, like Eric, he's lost several thousand dollars, not $100,000, not the triage amount that gets action immediately, but you've lost some money. It's money to him.
Oh, you know, it's significant. Not,
yeah.
Right? Like it's a significant amount.
And the money could be clawed back, but because we don't have the proper resources, he's lost his money.
Oh man!
Now, you know? More people than that in Shadow Crew.
Right, right.
That's one crew,
and that was the start of it. We had 4,000 people. Now you've got these criminal communities that are millions of members large.
Right.
Meanwhile, you've got 200 FBI agents.
I know. Do good work. Like
they do outstanding work.
There's no like we just need more of you.
Right.
You know,
and make no mistake, they do outstanding work.
Yeah.
They truly do.
But
there's just not enough.
No, it's exactly right.
So, you know, we were talking about fintech. You know, the problem is that a lot of these fintech companies, they are in a rush to put out a product.
Yep.
And make the money back. They've got VCs, you know, on their heels, everything else. So they
every
don't look
quarter,
at
every month, they've got to show returns.
Right. And they've got to show members. So you take something like, so Hindenburg put out a research report on Cash App, talking about how Cash App helps to facilitate fraud. And they're talking about, hey, 40% of all Cash App accounts are fraudulent. Think about that. 40%. But still.
And Mosher's only like 10% of that.
I'm just one fraudulent account. Come on.
But, you know, when you're talking about money coming in for investing, you're not really, you know, separating the fraudulent accounts from the legitimate accounts. You're just saying, hey, we've got several million accounts, and that helps you at your bottom dollar at the end of the day. So it's still boiling down to that profit. It's still boiling down to people just not doing it. Like I end my show saying, just do the right damn thing. And people are simply not doing that. We know criminals don't do that. They stay in their lane. But the people who are choosing, they've chosen a life of doing the right thing. You know, these fraud professionals, everyone else, they've chosen that career that dictates that you're supposed to be securing things for other people, and you're not doing that. And I'm having a lot of problems with that. You know, I'm this teetotaler now. I'm this recovering alcoholic, this recovering criminal that, much like that recovering alcoholic, I don't see things these days as gray area anymore. I see it as black.
Well, you're attuned to it. Like, I can see both sides, and I'm looking at it about what is objectively the correct action here, and why is it not happening?
So I've got issues with that, guys. I really do. And
makes sense.
You know, it bugs me. It bugs me to no end. So I'm raising hell about it.
Before we move on to our last subject, Joe Sullivan, which is always an entertaining topic. Tell me about, like, what can people do to protect themselves from fintech facilitated fraud, right?
So, I mean, here's the thing, and let me pull this up since you asked that question.
Did you bring your buddy with you? Like, I wanted to bring your buddy.
Actually, he's out of reach.
Oh, is he out of reach right now?
I'll bring him on the next time.
Okay, please do that and tell him we said hello.
tell him we said hello there. Hello. Let's see here.
Does he have an accent or something?
I keep trying to figure out what voice I want with that.
You need to just like do one of these voice app things and then use it whenever he talks.
So from, this is from Toby Scamell over at Womply. All right. Mm-hmm. And he says, in recent days, we've seen a significant increase in fraudulent applications. Here are some recommendations that may be applied to detect, prevent, investigate fraud against government platforms by private participants. So he gives a list of the different security things that you need to do as a business to make sure that fintech doesn't facilitate fraud. He says, you know, block all international IPs, all anonymous IPs, because people were committing pandemic fraud using the Tor browser at one point.
Right.
He says, block all voice over IP numbers. Database and KBA checks are widely exploited. So, and he gives a list of these companies that have been compromised that, you know, KBA is just useless on. He says, block temporary paper and foreign IDs. He talks about that. He talks about use video selfies with strict liveness detection, because some of the liveness detection services that were being used during the pandemic could be circumvented with masks, dolls, mannequins, etc. He says block all online banks at their routing numbers, because what you have to realize is that these prepaid cards have routing numbers that need to be flagged. A prepaid coming through with refund fraud, with pandemic fraud, anything else should be a major flag, but people weren't blocking that. He says, what else has he got here? He says, require funding into a named bank account, because again, prepaid cards don't have a name attached to them. So you were able to send multiple deposits in different names to prepaid cards. So you need to make sure that stuff's flagged. Require business bank accounts for business deposits that are coming in. He's got a whole list of different things that he mentions that need to be addressed. And that's, I think that that comes into this idea of a layered approach to security. Think of an attacker as having a toolbox. He uses a variety of tools. As a defender, you need that toolbox with a variety of tools, that multi-layered approach
Absolutely.
To mitigate all these different things across the board. I think that's from a business point of view. You have to consider that. From an individual point of view, at the end of the day, I think it's really having that situational awareness. And I've been talking about this for a few mm-hmm. months now of, you know, in our physical lives, we go into a bad neighborhood, we know immediately that something's off. If something
you go visit Mosher, you know my windows are rolled up.
You know
my windows are rolled up. I'm packing heat.
But you know, we've got that situational awareness. For some reason, it's not translating into an online environment. We tend to trust those online environments. And we need to understand that, okay, trust is fine. But you need to verify, and you need to understand there are predators in those environments. I think just doing that, if we can get to that level, the other things will follow. We'll understand we need to monitor our accounts. We will understand we need to have a credit freeze in place.
Freeze your credit. We recommend that all the time.
So you know, I used to talk about password managers. I'm no longer talking about password managers considering the trouble recently.
Yes.
But we've got pass keys. So, you know, good password protocols in place. I think that if we simply develop the situational awareness online, those other things will follow that we won't see, you know, like for MFA, a large adoption rate is like 12%. But if we can get to where we're having that situational awareness, I think that percentage will raise.
Well, that's a good, excellent advice. So thank you for that. And that's a really good segue too, because when we talk about MFA, whenever I think of MFA and what's an example where multi-factor authentication MFA hasn't worked, and I think of Uber. Because there's Uber that has MFA, right? They had MFA, right. And correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, like I've been wrong before, they tell me. But I heard, like, my understanding of the most recent breach of the 40 or the three or four, or whatever they've had, there's been a few. There's been a few there. But the most recent one was multi-factor authentication fatigue, right? Yeah. They kept paying. They got the email and password bought off the dark web or got it from a compromised account. So they tried to log in and it kept saying this is sent for multi-factor authentication. Okay. They just kept doing it over and over and over. So a couple things went wrong there. One is the user ultimately got tired and just said, enough, fine, click it. Okay. The other thing that went wrong there is you didn't get just tired and then clicked it. They communicated with them and said, hey, this is your IT department. Let's get on WhatsApp.
Right.
And they went off the main domain into WhatsApp. If that's not a red flag, like at a company, I don't know what is, but they went on WhatsApp. Like when I'm on LinkedIn and somebody immediately direct messages me on LinkedIn and goes, hey, you know, I'm not here on this platform that's off. Let's get on WhatsApp. I'm like, no, it's okay. Yeah. Let's stay here. Like, let's not go into the dark alley. Let's just stay in the light. Okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with using WhatsApp. I'm not saying that, but the point is in that context, that situational awareness, there's no reason to do that. So why would we do that? Well, they got him on WhatsApp and then they asked him to authenticate and then he did, right? The other issue there also was there wasn't like a zero trust assessment, like configuration, meaning from that one user, they were able to allegedly get all the way to the source code, which shouldn't have happened. And that one user might not have even known that they could get all the way up there, but the threat actors were able to find their way through. And that gets into that controlled access, meaning the way organizations are structured, they don't even know how they've rolled out permissions, right? They've got users that have access to accounting that should have no access to accounting. They don't even know that it's configured that way. But that's Uber.
That's Uber.
Something else happened in Uber. They They had a strategic security leader that got in a little trouble, didn't they?
He did get in a bit of trouble. He was a he had quite the resume. He was
phenomenal resume, yeah. and a great public speaker, like a really bright person. Like, holy cow!
I mean, top of the food chain.
Yep.
Former federal prosecutor. He had set up all these programs. He had evidently paved the way for many other people. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was good to go until two attackers come in and breach Uber, steal some of the data, and then things fall apart for the guy.
Yeah, because really what happens is when a breach happens, lo and behold, we don't want... What we always say is one of the benefits to engaging with security companies, right, is we help keep them out of the news. You don't want to be in the news. You don't want to be in reporting land. Right. You don't want to have to report this to shareholders, to stakeholders, to the public, to things like that, because it's bad for business.
Right. So this guy, what does he do? At that point in time, Uber had a bug bounty program. It was a max of $10,000. These attackers wanted $100,000. So he basically says, hey, what we'll do is we'll hide the breach, saying that these guys were just, you know, bug bounty guys. We'll pay them $100,000. We'll have them sign an NDA so they can't talk about it. And they'll go on their happy, merry way. Nobody has to know about the breach. No blemishes on my nice, pristine resume. Everything will be just fine. That's what he does.
And apparently that's legal. Like it's clear. Like,
who would have thought?
If you're listening and you don't catch that, like that's bad.
That's like bad.
Objective, binary, good, bad. That was a bad decision. Yeah,
that is obstruction and misprision.
Coming from Chicago, I mean, I'd say that's kind of the way business is run, but like it's generally not good. It's fraud, right? You can't do that. It seems to be that's how they captured it as fraud, and they indicted him. And it was the first security person, like in a private company, to face criminal charges. It was really shocking. It was very serious, and the charges weren't fraud. So it wasn't alleged to be fraud. It was like one was, I believe, allegedly false statements to the FTC because they were investigating him during this time that this happened. They were investigating Uber for and he was in a role with the former CEO, correct?
Right.
In discussions with the FTC about a prior breach.
Right.
And so the FTC felt, well, you should have brought this one up. Like, this is something
Matt would have mentioned that.
Yeah. I mean, that's just kind of situational awareness, right? Any other takes on that? I mean,
yeah, recently I've got one hell of a take on that.
Yeah. I mean, recently he was sentenced, right? He didn't, it was.
So here's the thing. The two guys, Joe Sullivan, the CISO of Uber, knew their names. They promised him, you know, scout's honor, we won't sell any of the data that we've stolen over on the dark web. Meanwhile, guess what? Yeah, it's being sold on the dark web.
Yes,
not only that, but these two guys that Joe Sullivan knew the names of, they go on to hit other companies with the exact same social engineering attack that they breached Uber with. Joe Sullivan could have stopped it all. He didn't.
Right.
Now, they charge his ass for obstruction, misprision, a couple of other things as well.
Yeah.
Joe Sullivan. His sentence is 3 years probation, 200 hours community service.
Very, very light.
Very light when you consider the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of victims because of his actions.
And I think this is where it gets to, do Americans even realize what that means to be a victim? Like,
right.
I still think they think, oh, so they have my password. I just changed my password. There's no harm, no foul. But that it's deeper than that. Like for the next 10, 15 years, you can pull your credit report for something 7, 8 years from now and find out you have a defaulted condo in Nevada. Like, that happens. I've met those people. Like it's brutal when this stuff happens. It ruins lives.
Now, here's the thing. That's Joe Sullivan's sentence, 200 hours. What would the sentence be for some kid on the dark? I say kid, some 20-year-old on the dark web who goes out and does that breach.
Oh, it'd be a lot more.
A lot more. He'd get 2 years in prison for aggravated identity theft. He'd get, depending on the number of victims, he's going to get charged for access device fraud. That level, he's probably looking at, for what Joe Sullivan, those victims were there. This kid's probably looking at 15 years behind bars.
Mm-hmm. Convicted felon the rest of your life.
Right.
All that, right? It's
but
tough.
Joe Sullivan gets off with community service. There's something wrong with that, especially when you consider that Sullivan, his entire career was based on the idea of him doing the right thing, of him protecting people. And at the end of the day, he didn't. It seems to me that by God, he should be serving some time behind the fence someplace.
Right. One would think, right? When you think about others in less serious predicaments, they get slammed.
Yeah. Yeah.
They get slammed.
But he's not. And again, not only is he not serving time, but we've got a whole boatload of people in the industry that are supporting the guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank God he didn't serve any time. He didn't need to serve any time. He got a horrible sentence as it was. He'll never be able to work in the industry again. Well, guess what?
No,
does that make any of these people, any of these victims, whole again? Does that solve the problem? Does it deter anybody from doing similar that he did? No,
or
it
is
doesn't.
That other? No, it doesn't. Right, and is that also a just them projecting? Like,
that's it.
Well, I'm a CISO. If I recommend that to my client, I don't want to go to jail. I won't.
Yeah. That's it.
I got 90 days for my last indecent exposure. Where's the phone?
Who let him out of the closet?
I got 90 days for that.
Oh, yeah.
I had one lady tell me it looked like a penis, only smaller.
Oh, he's like the end on a real high note, on a moral high note, right, with us, with this group.
I apologize to my family, my children.
I'm sorry.
Wife. I'm sorry.
There's a reason Brett keeps getting banned on YouTube.
you can come on our channel all day long, man. You can just flow right through here. I'll start you off and then I'll just check out. You can go ahead.
That's it.
It's fine. You'll always have a voice.
No, I think that Sullivan needed to serve some time. I think that honestly, I think he should have gotten 2 to 3 years.
Well, and I would think honestly, like after being a former federal prosecutor too, like usually when judges do one thing bad, like they go down and they go down hard because of the fact that they've been given this privilege.
Yeah.
Because and the same people that are like backing him are the first ones to say, well, you know, when you're privileged, you shouldn't have those rights. Well, here's hypocritical. Like,
you know, that goes into this.
Having that privilege means you have to have it. You have to keep it sacred.
I agree. And it goes into this, you know, it really is like we've got two different systems of justice in the United States. We've got the system that Sam Bankman-Fried is allowed to operate under, or Elizabeth Holmes, or Joe Sullivan.
I was about to ask you about Elizabeth Holmes because I've never asked you about Elizabeth Holmes.
We'll have to make a whole episode about
it. If there's anything that makes me angry, it's Theranos and Elizabeth Holmes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. I just like, it's everything, you know, in our sales training and stuff, like we're very careful with the words that we use, the promises that we make, all of that. We have to be very careful because these wound up being legal terms of art. Like we cannot, and my gosh, if we could say, you know, we will 100% keep you secure and you will never have a problem, we guarantee it. And by the way, we're going to triple the size of your business because of this one service. Like that's what they were saying. And and then they were getting hundreds of millions of dollars for people. Like, but I mean, that whole arc of how they had this, you know, the board on there had all these huge names, none of them medical, right? None of them with any science background that could call BS, you know, and they just kept doing this. And then they rolled it out to the public through Walgreens and holy cow. And now she, the sentence there keeps getting continued, right? She hasn't.
Well, her report date, she got her report date yesterday. So she has, barring any new developments.
Oh, she got her report date yesterday. Okay. That was an update I missed. So, hey, we got the update finally.
So May 30th is her prison report date.
There it is. Okay.
Yeah. So those are, and those are pretty well locked in at that point. But, you know, the thing is, again, if that had been anybody else, if it had been someone without means, they wouldn't have had to worry about a report date because they would have already been locked up. They wouldn't have been out on bond or anything else like that. So it really is. I mean, I.
Yeah. And she was destitute, remember? But meanwhile, driving home with everything to like a $50 million house and all that. And you're like, okay.
Yeah. So hopefully she'll rot in there for a while.
Yeah, her sentence was quite light, though. Her sentence was not as I think because it didn't kill somebody. Like it did cause false reports on cancer screenings and all of this because it was claiming to do all of this, but yet it didn't do anything, and it was never consistent. But I think that just the lack of remorse. Just the complete denial. Like, I still believe like this, we would have done it. And then he also gets into like an intellectual question of, what point do you call it? Like there are examples of people that have made claims because the technology just hadn't caught up yet because it was heading there. Now, the issue was, when they were making these claims, did they have actual scientific knowledge that what they were saying was false? And I think the evidence showed they knew that.
Oh,
and
they so knew. They absolutely knew.
That's the issue, right? That's the issue. But had they just kind of stayed under the radar a little, kept the money, stayed a little bit under the radar, maybe not rolled it out to the public and applied that as science to the public yet, they probably could have kept going until the technology caught up. But they didn't.
They didn't.
You know what I mean?
They didn't. And you see Holmes now. I mean, you're right. I mean, there's no remorse.
No.
I didn't do anything wrong. It would have worked. Bang, bang, bang. And I mean, so you're going to allow that. You're going to give somebody a light sentence that doesn't care about the damage that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be Joe Sullivan, whether it be Elizabeth Holmes, and it's going to be Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So my PO just texted me. Apparently he's watching. He says I need to call him right after the episode.
Hey, are you off that monitor? Give me a call. We need you to come in.
Moshe was asking me for a chainsaw and a hacksaw and a big like the thing, you know, wire cutters earlier. I didn't know he was cutting off his band on his ankle.
There you go. Well, guys, you guys are outstanding, truly.
Brett Johnson, thank you so much, sir. Absolutely not the last time that we're going to talk, because there's going to be a lot more updates and things to cover for sure.
Oh, without a doubt.
We will have links to the Brett Johnson Show in our show notes. Please check him out, the Brett Johnson Show on YouTube. Follow him on Twitter, very active on Twitter and LinkedIn.
Very active.
Don't look for him.
Don't look for him on TikTok.
And that's right. Everything else, thank you so much, man.
Take care, guys.
We absolutely appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Thanks, Brett. Take care, brother.
Take care now.
Hey, well, that's a wrap. Thank you for listening. Our next episode starts right now.
Please be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's free. And download the podcast episodes available everywhere you get podcasts.
To support our show and get exclusive pre-release episodes and bonus content, please subscribe to Cybercrime Junkies Prime.
Link in the description and show notes. And thanks for being a Cybercrime Junkie.